welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 29 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltaka. Thanks for joining me again. So today on the podcast, I have a lengthy discussion with my friend Scott Carpenter from International Shooting Supplies. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a quick update. I'm going to try to make it as brief as I can, although I do have a few things I have to cover in that time. So I'll talk quick. And then we'll move on to Scott. And the interesting story with this whole discussion that we're going to have with him is that he calls me up yesterday. He says, hey, I was thinking of stopping by, this morning. And I said, okay, sure. Sounds good. And I go, what's going on? He goes, I think we need to make a podcast. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so he comes over. I'm like, I wonder what's on his mind. And basically, there are a series of initiatives going on in the BC government at a couple of different levels to restrict and or completely eliminate the ability for Canadian citizens and residents of, well, any Canadian citizen, because we don't have borders in our provinces, to access wilderness areas in British Columbia. So there's... And it's a whole different series of different initiatives designed to do that, to restrict access or even to eliminate it entirely, which is, I'm not going to get into it. I'm going to let Scott talk about it at length. But anyway, that's a very interesting discussion and some of the things going on. And it's indicative of everything that's going on, which is, turning citizens into subjects. And I don't like it. I don't like it when it comes to people taking my firearms away when I haven't done anything wrong to deserve it. I don't like it when people use racist insults or call me a Nazi when I haven't done anything to deserve it. And I don't like it when my rights and or privileges in the country, it's really a country of privileges, are denied. And I just don't like it. So anyway, look forward to getting a spike of high blood pressure when listening to Scott on that one. So on to the update. So I'm just going to run right through basically. A couple of things. Number one, we got a newsletter out a couple of days ago, and so that's great. We're trying to do a better job of that. We've always been trying to do a better job of that, but at the same time, we will never spam you, and that's a guarantee for me. As long as I'm around, there will not be emails coming every week into your email mailbox from the CCFR. Most times, we release probably about five newsletters a year, if that would be a big year, right? It's usually about three. And then you'll get a couple of emails during your renewal cycle just to remind you, hey, we need you to participate and be a member, because that's the only way that we can continue. So aside from that, we're trying to get a newsletter out every month. Maybe we'll be able to get to the point where it's every 3 weeks. I don't know. But I'm very anti-spam, so we'll see how that works. But anyway, we just sent one out. It's got a fairly decent update in there for you. If you have not, and this is the important thing, if you have not received a newsletter from us in the last couple of days, you have to sign up for the news, subscribe to our news feed. Now, here's how you do it. You go to firearmrights.ca, right, the CCFR website, scroll all the way to the bottom, and then there's a newsletter subscription form there. Make sure, and you know what, even if you're not a member of the CCFR, just subscribe to the newsletter, because if something happens to our social media platforms, this is the only way that we can communicate with you. And if there's an emergency, this is the only possible way that we can communicate with you. So make sure that you're subscribed for that. I promise you, as long as I'm around, we will not spam you. But get on that list. So go to the CCFR website, firearmrights.ca, scroll down to the bottom, and make sure you're signing up for the newsletter. Okay, really important. In the newsletter, we had an update that our clothing line has now been released. So it's in stock. It's in the store. It's called the CCFR Bold Collection. If I didn't mention it in the last podcast, basically, if you go to firearmrights.ca, you click store, and then there's a heading up there, and it says catalog. Just click on catalog and then click on CCFR Bold Collection. That's what it's called. Now, in there, my favorite one is a copywritten trademark slogan. Firearm rights are human rights, firearmrights.ca. So I love the slogan. No one else has been using that slogan. I actually did a search, something that we came up with ourselves, and we're going to brand a lot of stuff with that, because to be honest with you guys, I absolutely believe that firearm rights are human rights. It's funny. Let me just digress for a second. I've been spending a little bit more time on Twitter to bully the bullies. because I don't like it when people get bullied and the bullies get away with it. So now I'm coming to stomp on their toes myself because I just don't like that. But anyways, something that keeps coming up is, it's already been established that in Canada, you do not have a right to own a firearm. The Supreme Court ruled on this. And my answer to that is human rights are denied all the time. In Canada, your right of self-defense is continuously denied. And the only people that would disagree with that are people that don't keep track of these things. If you do any reading, you do any research, or if you're cognizant whatsoever to what's going on, the system makes it so onerous and so horrible, such a life-changing, life-destroying event, meaning, you know, what happens to you if you defend yourself, that even if it's lawful, it's life-changing and a total assault on your life, that some people don't defend themselves and they end up dying as a result or suffering grievous bodily harm. So anyway, human rights in Canada are denied, by the way, and we believe that firearm rights are human rights because you should have the right of self-defense and you should have a right to do whatever it is you want as long as you're not affecting someone else. You can't intervene so much in someone's life the way that they're doing right now. So anyway, one of my favorite things, I just thought I'd mention that if you are yourself having some kind of argument, whether it's in person or on some social media platform. Now, I will tell you this, is that the response to the clothing has been so great, and by extension, the calendar sales have been so great, that there's a huge backlog in the store. So I was probably the third person, if not the first person, to order new CCFR clothing, and my order, that was 1 week ago, my order hasn't shipped yet. So I'm looked into it, and apparently there's a backlog of hundreds of orders. And the reason was there was already a backlog of calendar orders, and then the clothing came out on top of that. So I will be shaking things up over at our clothing suppliers to find out when those shipments are going to go out, and if not, what it's going to take to get them out, because I don't like that personally. I want my stuff. So there'll be more news on that, and I'll see if I can get that out quicker. But just be aware, be patient if you can. Hopefully everything will be to you in time for Christmas. That was my goal when I ordered it. So anyway, check that out if you haven't. Again, go to firearmrights.ca. Click store. When you go to the store, click catalog and find the CCFR bowl collection. Some pretty cool stuff in there. Now, one thing I did want to, I'm forgetting a lot of updates, or I'm not even going to cover them because I'm trying to make this quick. But one of the things I did want to talk about is in the discussion that you're going to hear with me and Scott, I mentioned something about demonstrations and that it may be time coming soon for demonstrations. Now, I want to explain this a little bit because it's important. There's really three things that we always get asked over and over again. No matter how many times I answer them or anyone else answers them, their questions just getting asked. And that's probably because we always got new people coming in and whatnot. And here's the three questions. Number one, where's my free speech in the CCFR Facebook group? There is no free speech there. It's a group of people that voluntarily have gotten in. It's not a public square, and we're trying, and we're not always successful, but our admins work really, really hard to make sure that people can express themselves and ask any question that they want, but reduce the amount of disrespect that people show each other. And the reason for that is that you can easily ask a question. You can easily say, oh, that's a question that's been asked many times, like I'm doing right now, and be polite about it rather than attacking somebody because you're frustrated. So we're trying to keep that to a minimum in the Facebook group. So it does, it is kind of a welcoming environment, because I'll give you an example. There's a firearm forum that is notorious in Canada for being so extremely toxic that there's probably literally 100,000 people that have an account there that won't even use that account and go in there because they can't ask a single question without getting hate spewed all over them. And that's not going to be our Facebook group, and we're not going to let one or two or five people do that to our group. So while our admins aren't perfect, they're doing, in my opinion, a hell of a job about 95% of the time, and they're all volunteer. So I think that's something that people forget too. People are volunteering their time, you know, sitting there at dinner admitting the stinking group. So really, that's a difficult job to do at the best of times, much less these guys do it for no pay. So thank you to the admins. Really appreciate it. And keep up the good work. And I just want to explain that to people so they understand what our ideology is there. We just don't want to be a horrible place where nobody wants to ask a question. That defeats the purpose. The next thing that gets asked all the time is, why aren't we working with other orgs? I'm not going to get into that because I just did that on an update video that I posted in the main group as well. This has really nothing to do with the CCFR. We've actually been the only one that have tried to reach out and been, you know, rebuffed, I guess is the word. And here's what I wanted to talk about were demonstrations. Now, the reason why the CCFR doesn't advocate demonstrating physically. The reason for that is demonstrations are extremely risky, and especially for a gun group, for the following reasons. Number one, if we host a demonstration and no one shows up, that looks really bad on us. Number two, oh great, let's say a whole bunch of people show up. Well, what happens is it creates a lot of risk on our behalf as a community, because the media will come in, they'll look for the most unstable, angry face they can find in the crowd, and they'll go straight to that person and ask them all about the about why they're there and why the, you know, why there's a protest, and in an effort to just make us look crazy or make us look like we really don't know what it is we want or what we're doing. You know, if they saw me at the protest, I guarantee they probably just steer clear of me. They're like, we don't want to hear from that guy. You know, no, they want to hear from the organizers. So you got to be really careful how we're represented. So and the larger the protest is, the larger the attendance, we think, oh, that's great. Well, that's a larger group they have to pick from. And we can't see them, you know, filtering around in the group, taking comment from people that aren't actually speaking on our behalf. So it's kind of risky from a public relations perspective. The other thing is, God forbid something bad happens or there's violence. Just think about that for a second, right? You know, pro-gun rally, shots fired at pro-gun rally, right? Or you know, violence at pro-gun rally and pepper spray and people getting hit over the head. And of course, you know, the dregs of society will come out waving communist flags, which I just saw at a demonstration at Parliament Hill. And gun owners are probably the worst people that you want to try to perpetrate violence on. But you know, you can never underestimate the stupidity of people that that oppose us. It's completely insane. So anyway, all that to say, these are the reasons why we don't advocate demonstrations, at least to this point, until things get really bad. I think the other public relations work that we do, we can control very well, and it's coming across wonderfully, and we're being wildly successful with it. And how we measure success, I mentioned that in the previous podcast, right? It's still a topic of national discussion, so we're doing something. So I guess at the end of the day is what I'm trying to say, what I'm trying to pull on myself, because I'm not scripted here, is I'm trying to say that the risk versus reward, it's tough. So, you know, and one really bad demonstration that goes horribly wrong is something that the firearms community probably wouldn't recover from public relations wise. So that's why I'm really careful with that. It's a nuclear option in my mind, to be honest with you. Now, will protests become necessary? I believe that at some point they will become necessary. So while I'm risk adverse when it comes to firearm owners, I don't want them getting any bad PR. At the same time, like, I would never rule it out. So don't think for a second that we've ruled out mass protests. And that time might even be coming soon. So anyway, just letting you know. But it's a card that you don't pull out. It's almost like violence itself. You don't pull that out unless you have no other choice. So anyways, all right. Well, that's it for the update. I'm going to break now and come right back with my buddy Scott Carpenter. So stay tuned.
The media constantly makes a connection between licensed gun owners and criminal use of firearms. Whether it's intentional or not, the effect is the same. The average non-gun-owning Canadian agrees with our country's ineffective and prejudicial regulations. There is one organization in Canada that focuses on taking back public opinion, and that's the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights. Stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms. Donate now or become a member at www.firearmrights.ca.
Sleep all day, out all night. I know where you're going.
All right, everybody, we're back. I've got Scott Carpenter here in the studio with me. How's it going, Scott?
Good, Rod. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Well, Scott's got a lot on his mind today. So we spoke on the phone and you said, you know, we should do a podcast. And you know, when you told me that you didn't explain anything on the phone, I thought, oh, I wonder what's on his mind. But when you got here, the floodgates opened. So it's probably a good idea for us to share a little bit about what's going on and maybe some ways, different ways to look at it. So the first thing we'll talk about is, can you tell me about some land closures that are going on in BC?
Yeah, I got a notice on my Facebook page, I'm going to say about a week ago, and it came through Corlaine Sporting Goods in Dawson Creek. And there's some interesting things going on in the province of BC right now that everybody who uses the backcountry, not just shooters and hunters, but everyone who lives, works, and uses the backcountry and recreates in British Columbia need to know. And right now, the provincial government, with some backing from the federal government, is involved in some closed door talks about shutting down a huge piece of land in the South Peace region of the province. And when I say huge, I'm not talking about 500 acres here. We're talking about the majority of the region itself. So we're in around 500,000 acres of land being shut down for public access. And the reason they're saying that they're going to do this is because the caribou population in the region is under threat, which it is. And we've known this for a long time. I used to live in Dawson Creek. I was employed at Corlaine Sporting Goods for close to a decade. While I was living there, we sat in a lot of meetings with biologists in the province during my tenure at the shop up there, and talked about a lot of things in terms of wildlife management. And one of the things we talked about with biologists on a regular basis was predator control. And there's been a problem with wolves and cougars moving into the region up there for over a decade now. When I arrived in Dawson in 97, there were virtually no cougars in the region. They were more of a myth than anything else. By the time I left in 2009, they were opening a hunting season on them. They were trapping them in town. The cougars had expanded well into that territory and north into the Fort Nelson region. On top of that, the wolf population has gone unchecked in that region for a long time. The big concern when I was there was actually the stone sheep population. And the stone sheep were being really, their populations were being hurt pretty badly by the wolf population and eventually by the cougars that were moving in. The solution, of course, to these things is to be proper stewards of the land. You know, our ancestors have known this for thousands of years, that if you don't steward the land, if you don't look after things like predator populations, that it has an adverse impact on our ungulate populations as well. And that's what's happening to the sheep, and that's what's happened to the caribou in the South Peace. So we've got a population of caribou now that's gone from a few thousand animals down to just a few hundred. And the province's response to this has been to hold closed door meetings to exclude the stakeholders in the region, which are the communities, the businesses that operate there, the mines, the timber companies, the sporting goods businesses like ours, the ATV businesses, all the related clubs that are associated with those. Their solution is to lock all of those users completely out of that land. I posted this information to Facebook. Someone said, I'd like to see the data. Well, the data is not available because the province hasn't made it available. There was supposed to be a meeting scheduled here, I believe, for the 4th. Between some of the community stakeholders, the Chamber of Commerce in Dawson Creek was involved. The guys from Corlaine's in Dawson Creek were going to be involved in a variety of other people. And the province actually canceled the meeting. So to this date, there's a plan by the province in conjunction with the federal government to close a huge portion of the province to all human access other than First Nations. And they have not consulted any of the citizens living in the region or anyone else in the province for that matter. So this is deeply concerning to me because this isn't how a free and open democratic system is supposed to function. You know, we're supposed to have transparency in our government, and we're supposed to know, we're supposed to be able to speak with one another and share data and share information and be involved in the process and consult in terms of solutions and how these things should be solved. And that hasn't happened in this case. So what we're looking at is, in my opinion, and I'm not speaking for on behalf of the people who have started this movement, that this movement in terms of bringing awareness to what's happening there goes to the people who live and work in the South Peace region of the province. I've just sort of taken on some interest in it myself. But the concern here is that this is going to, from my perspective, is that this is going to be used as a template. And if this goes through without consultation of all the relevant user groups in the region, then it's a template for shutting us out of the backcountry and the rest of the province as well. And if you know how government functions, then it can also be used for a template in other provinces that are receptive to it too. Now, this is a bit of a hard sell for the federal government in a lot of provinces right now, because the other provinces are moving towards conservative governments provincially, and it's unlikely that they'll be involved in shutting their own taxpayers out of publicly owned land. But it's a big problem in BC right now, because the Greens hold the balance of power here, as we well know, and they're pretty radically left, and I don't think they have any issues with shutting industry down and with seeing people's livelihoods destroyed, and they don't have no issue with seeing a culture that's sort of based around resource stewardship and use, based around independence and self-sufficiency. I don't think they have a problem seeing that culture wiped out. And so we're sort of in crisis mode here in this province right now, whether we want to acknowledge it or not. This is the canary in the coal mine. The South Peace right now is literally the canary in our coal mine, because those coal mines are going to get shut down. And if we don't wake up and realize that what's happening in our country right now is actually sort of a three-pronged attack, right? And that we're being attacked from three different directions. So we have the federal government attacking us on the gun control front, right? We have provincial governments that are far left-leaning attaching us from the environmental front. And then we have the sort of weird, strange animal rights activist types attacking us in the media and whatnot. If we don't understand that these three things are combined and they're designed to literally squash the culture that's grown up out of the land here. Our culture has always been based on our relationship to the land. That's why we're a gun-owning culture to begin with, because, you know, we're a tiny population living in a giant geographical area, and firearms have become a necessary tool for most of us in our day-to-day lives. It's a part of who we are. So if they can push us out of that land and create a reason for us to or create a reason to say that we don't need those guns anymore, because you can't hunt, you can't shoot, you can't even go back there anyway, why do you need your guns? Then they're creating a situation where we become defenseless and in the witnessing of the destruction of our own way of life.
Well,
and that's what's happening.
Part of that, and part of that effort is the attack on ranges.
Yes.
And we've seen that in other provinces, both on the way that lead is handled.
Yes.
It's, you know, I don't want to comment too much because I don't understand the dynamics of how lead in the ground. I mean, lead comes from the ground.
Lead comes from the ground. And the interesting thing is that lead doesn't leach.
Yeah.
Okay. I had this conversation with a customer of mine yesterday who owns a big manufacturing plant, and he knows all about lead. Mm-hmm. And lead does not leach. Lead doesn't actually create the environmental problem unless it's consumed. It would have to be consumed. So the only way that lead would be environmentally dangerous to, say, the animals living in the area is if they were digging into our berms and consuming the lead, which we know that deer and birds and bears and all these other animals that live in and around our ranges do not do.
Right.
So the lead really isn't an environmental hazard. It's a load of crap.
But it's being represented as such. So
it
there's
is.
An attack on ranges.
Yes.
And you know, depending on how extensive the regulation that they want to come in is, it will just flat out make ranges disappear. So
correct.
To go back to what you're saying, now there's an attack on ranges. Well,
yes.
you got no ranges around.
Right.
And you can't hunt because you have no human access.
Right.
To the backcountry, like shut off, which is, we'll get into the little bit higher level philosophical issues there.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you have guns? You're not a target shooter. You're not a hunter.
Yes. So
and
they're going
to, of course, it's unacceptable for you to use a firearm to defend yourself.
Right. So they're going to remove every reason,
every justification
for you owning a firearm. And then they're going to push you into a corner, geographically speaking. So, you know, if you're a person living in a place like Dawson Creek, what makes your economic world go around? Well, it's the resource sector. You know, it's agriculture, it's mining, it's oil and gas. And if these industries are shut down, then which they constitute the foundation for everything that goes on in a community like Dawson Creek. Mm-hmm. You know, the sporting goods businesses, the ATV businesses, the car, the automobile businesses,
trucks,
everything.
Everything, yeah.
Everything is dependent on those resource industries being able to run round and round. And if they're shut down, then those businesses in those communities are shut down too. So pretty soon people leave.
And where do the people go then?
Where do the people go? Well, they have to go where there's work and where there's an economy, and that's to the cities.
Yeah.
So if you can't see the pattern yet, people, open your eyes. There is a visible pattern happening in this country, and it's BC is now the template for it. Wake up.
Yeah. The whole idea of shutting off wilderness areas to humans, period.
Yes.
Like that. Now, okay, so the conversation may take a hard turn
mm-hmm.
right now, and you know it may be a little much for some folks. So viewer discretion advised.
Okay. Yeah, and excuse my stumbling, but there's a little bit of an emotional aspect to this because I'm a hunter before I was a gun guy.
Yeah,
and the idea of being turned into essentially a tax serf, whose movement is completely restricted to an urban area is absolutely disgusting to me. You know, I can't even fathom it. So,
well, and yeah, you know, this is the sound of me trying to hold on to this conversation.
Yeah.
And not let it get away from me.
Yeah.
But I will, just for fun, just if you guys will come with us on this little walk.
Yeah. Right? It's a walk.
We're just having a little walk here.
Okay.
But it's there a long time ago. There was a whatever we'll call it, just to be politically correct, if I need to be, which is not, doesn't happen to me all the time, but anyway, I'm trying to hold on to this thing. There was a claim made a long time ago when the movie The Hunger Games came out,
mm-hmm.
and there were people that said, just have a look at that movie, and this is what the ruling class, this is where they want us. They want us all squished into big cities.
Yeah.
We're poor under the burden of excessive taxation.
Yes.
The anywhere outside the cities are no-go zones for us. We are not allowed to go into the wilderness. We're not allowed to hunt for animals. We're not allowed to make, no, what you get is what you get in the cities, and every, all the rest of the wilderness area, that's untouched. That's not for you. It's only for a certain group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And this was stuff that was said like literally 8-10 years ago.
Yeah.
They said, if you, because the Hunger Games used to be a book.
Yeah.
And they said, if you want to see what the template is for the future, where we're being pushed, read the Hunger Games. And then,
right.
of course, it became popularized in a movie and
yeah.
and all the rest of that stuff. And probably the message itself delegitimized a little bit because it's now a movie and, you know, it's supposed to be just a fantasy.
Right.
But if you are perceptive enough to look over the last 8-10 years of where things have gone. You know, and I don't want to throw in problem, reaction, solution concepts, but I think if most people, if they're familiar with that concept, they can see it.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're actually seeing it in regulation.
Yes.
They want to get rid of all of our guns.
Yes.
We're at absolute throw down, gloves off war with the government all the time about just trying to retain our guns. Only just about just being right. left alone.
But it's coming at us from every direction now. Yeah. So, I mean, our government has literally entered into a phase where it's almost at war with its own people in terms of taxation, in terms of restriction of movement, in terms of industry, mm-hmm. in terms of our right just to do simple things like even defend our own homes from aggression.
Yeah.
You know, the government is literally squeezing us into a corner at this stage on every front, and it's using fake science and fake data.
Fake stats. Double speak.
And essentially what boils down to a Marxist ideology to do it. And we're letting it happen. So, I mean, now is the time to fight back, and now is the time to push back. If you don't do it now, if you don't start connecting all the dots together and see that you're being attacked for a purpose from all these different directions, then I can't help you anymore.
Yeah.
We're headed to a bad place.
And you said something earlier about the courts are not the place to be fighting these battles.
No,
it has to be, you have to win way before the courts ever become an option.
You know, I bought Sun Tzu's Art of War when I was probably about 20 or 21 years old. And the one lesson I always took away from that book was, you know, if you want to win a war, you actually have to win before you go to war. And if you're in the courts, you've already lost. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because something bad has already happened and you're there trying to sort it out. And if you don't own the courts, if the courts are stacked with a particular type of judge, you can't win. The law can be used as a weapon. Let's face it. The law can be weaponized and it can be used against you. And so you need to win before you get to the courts. So now is the time to win.
And there's no better example than the long gun registry data, mm-hmm. which was legislated to be destroyed.
Yes.
But Quebec was kept because of, that's a long story. I had Bob Zimmer on to talk about exactly why that data was there. But then a judge just said, oh yeah, no, it's okay.
Yep.
And, or no, it wasn't. It was Ralph Goodale saying, oh yeah, don't worry about what the courts decided, that Quebec had no right to that.
Yep.
I mean, that was decided.
Yep.
And in fact, we had a gun group saying, oh, you know, our big value is, you know, we launched these lawsuits or these petitions in court. And, oh, that's the only place to win these things. Well, you know what? The government turned around. They said, we don't care that we lost in court. We're going to create legislation that says you get that data anyway if you ask for it.
That's right. You already lost.
They legislated against the court decision.
Yep.
And that should be a really clear demonstration for anybody that's listening, that's mm-hmm. capable of higher critical thought, mm-hmm. to go, okay, they'll just nullify your victories.
That's right.
That's where they are.
That's
so
right.
It has to be done a long time before. So I agree with you there.
Yep. Yep. So there's, you know, I would advise people to go onto Facebook and to go online. And at least in British Columbia, in terms of what's happening with these land closures, I'd like you to check out the Concerned Citizens for Caribou Recovery page on Facebook. Look them up. They've got a GoFundMe page. I'm not involved in it. And I don't know if I will be because, you know, I have my own more vocal opinions that are unrelated to what's going on there as well. But I would highly encourage you to go and check them out and to read what's going on in the piece and understand how it's going to affect you, regardless of where you may live in the province.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. The idea that you are forbidden from going on forestry access roads or going out into the forest, like that idea is completely objectionable.
It's an anathema to almost everything that our culture stands for.
Yeah.
And I know that myself and a lot of other people are not going to stand for it. This will be the straw that broke the camel's back in British Columbia. And I'd just like to send a message to the NDP and the Greens. If you think that we're going to roll over and take this, you're dreaming. There's a lot of people that live in the North that vote NDP every year because they're union guys and they're labor guys and they're good people. You know, they vote NDP because they believe that it's important for them in the preservation of their jobs and their livelihood. And I get that. They're hardworking guys, right? They're the kind of people we need more of in the province, hardworking people. But when those people see what this government is trying to do to them, how they're literally going to destroy the industry that puts food on their table, how they're going to take them out of the backcountry and destroy the culture that they grew up in, they're never going to vote NDP ever again. And that message needs to go to the legislature and be heard.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, other provinces have other, now I'm no expert, so I don't want to comment too much. And somebody that's listening to this podcast, maybe that lives in New Brunswick or lives in Eastern Canada, mm-hmm. they know that you can't target shoot out in the bush.
No.
You actually have to have, you can only have a firearm, I think, during hunting season. And you have to be a hunter with a hunting license.
In some of the Eastern provinces.
Yeah, yeah, just to be out there with a gun.
Yeah.
And I you know, I heard about that, you know, years ago and I'm like, what? Can that be right?
Yep.
I mean, so it's already started in Eastern Canada in different forms.
That's right.
And it's only increasing. And, you know, we had a conversation. I don't want to allude too much to what that conversation was because everybody will find out about that later. But a national program and a national strategy has to be formulated. And we're going to actively do that at either the end of this year, right at the tail end, last few days of this year, or in January.
Yep.
And we need to have a completely holistic, far-reaching plan all the way past October of 2019 of a national response. And we're going to need everybody's support for that, both logistically, financially at some level. I'm not going to, you know, ask about or say, you know, what we're going to need that for. We'll find out what we need to fund mm-hmm. and how much it'll cost and what we choose to accomplish
yep.
Of all that. But just people getting involved, whether it's demonstrations.
Yep.
I'm not a big fan of actual demonstrations.
Yeah, me neither.
But we may get there.
Yeah.
You know, even the last few days looking what's gone on with the yellow vests.
Yeah, that's something.
I'm starting to think that.
I think people are waking up.
I may be pushed into that direction to advocate a demonstration, which is very risky for gun owners.
It is. And, but I mean, what we're going to need going forward is we're going to need people to help us logistically with research and with putting information together and with making sure that it gets out to the right people because it needs to get, this is like DEFCON, like level 4 or 5 type crap. It's time to take this to the wall.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because the as far as firearms are concerned, the activists have been largely target shooters, people that own handguns and black rifles, because we're the first to be attacked.
Yep.
And overwhelmingly, the people that sit on the sidelines tend to be hunters. I mean, you've got some active hunters that they're not going to take it anymore, totally. But they tend to think, well, you know, my guns aren't under threat and I can still do all, you know, like I'm unaffected.
Right.
And our message has always been, no, you're just not going to get affected until we're all gone.
Yep.
But while cutting off access to the backcountry is a horrible thing and it's terrible that we got to this point, it sometimes can be useful because sometimes people need to be affected before they stand up.
You know, we're at DEFCON level 4 or 5 right now. The goal is not to get to 1. So let's start with a plan now to make sure that, you know, we get out in front of all this stuff. Get on the Facebook page, donate a little bit of money to these people, get them some help. And then, you know, let's go from there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to wrap. I think we've been talking a while.
Yep.
I'm going to wrap it up for now, but I appreciate you coming down. And we'll make a point of having some of these more involved discussions a little bit more often on the podcast. So I appreciate it, Scott.
No problem, Rod. Thanks for having me.
It's a fact that licensed gun owners do not represent a disproportionate risk to public safety. Yet, whether it's backdoor gun registries, complex regulations, or unreasonable penalties for paperwork offenses, Canada's anti-gun bureaucrats will never stop trying to eliminate your will or ability to own and use firearms. Take action, take a stand, and join the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights by visiting us at www.firearmrights.ca.
All right. Thanks to my friend Scott Carpenter for coming in and giving this that story. It's stressful. Makes me angry. As I think I said in the intro, I just can't stand bullies, and I hate people taking over what it belongs to everybody, and then bullying everyone else and trying to revoke it. You know, your rights or your privileges, and it's just drives me crazy. Anyway, sorry if that was stressful to some people and got you mad, but it is what it is, and it's sort of news, and you know, I'd hate that to happen in other people's provinces as well. So stay as active as you can politically with your MLA. Remember, your MLAs are the ones that deal with these provincial issues, which is land use, right? So participate as much as you can and find out. These people will do absolutely anything they want to you if you stay silent. And that was one of the reasons why the CCFR was so important, because we needed, a national face that is there all the time, not just once in a while, not just there when there's a gun bill, every stinking day, letting these people know that we're here, we're watching them, and that we're not going to put up with it. So really important. Anyway. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up for now with the obligatory announcements. Please become a Patreon supporter if you're interested in doing that. For $20 a month, you can be part of the CCFR Insiders. So you go to Patreon and just search for the CCFR and you'll find us there. We'd greatly appreciate that. Make sure if you're not on the mailing list, for God's sakes, go to firearmrights.ca and get on the mailing list. If something happens, I'm prepared to lose our social media platforms literally anytime. Okay, so if that happens, this is the only way that we can get a hold of you. So make sure that you're on the mailing list. I promise we won't spam you. New clothes are in the store. There's a backlog there. I'm going to try to sort that out so everybody gets their stuff before Christmas, if Canada Post doesn't stop us from doing that. I'm going to do one more podcast before Christmas. That's my goal. And I'm going to try to get a few people on as guests. So we'll see if I have time to make that happen. But that's my goal. So stay tuned, stay safe, stay informed, and we will see you all soon.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.